You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to This Catholic Life podcast, and I am your host, Rosalie Contrite of the Contrite Catholic blog. You can always find me at www.contritecatholic.com. Welcome to today's show, where we will be discussing NFP and sex. So if you are around young ears, littles, who would be better disposed not to listening to these topics, now is your time to turn it off. All right, let's talk about sex, baby. I'm just kidding. So let me be serious about this. A lot of people don't even know what NFP is. They think it's the rhythm method. If they do know what it is, oftentimes they don't see how it is different from birth control at all. To begin, I want to outline how it is different and dispel a few myths along the way. A lot of people think the church is against birth control because it is science. This is completely false. The Catholic Church loves science. A Catholic priest who was good friends with Albert Einstein theorized the Big Bang. Gregor Mendel, the father of modern genetics, was a monk. And Louis Pasteur, who discovered the aptly named pasteurization, said the rosary daily. And John Paul II put it best, St. John Paul, St. Pope John Paul, that's a lot of titles. He said, faith and reason are like two wings of the human spirit by which it soars to the truth. Faith and reason, rightly understood, never contradict one another. The actual reason the church is against birth control is complex, yet easily understood. The difference between birth control and NFP is the difference between not sending an invitation to a party, which is what NFP does when it takes advantage of infertile periods naturally present, and sending them a disinvitation, which is what using contraception does when it disorders the use of sex, ordering it toward gratification. Sending a disinvitation would obviously be very rude, so hopefully no one here is sending out disinvitations. What the key is here is that we cannot divorce the natural order from things. Sex is objectively for procreation and bonding. We cannot divorce its purpose from it and be in line with the natural order. What would you say to somebody if they wanted to stop using their stomach for eating? Let's say instead they wanted to use it as a luggage compartment. Hopefully you would think they were insane. And essentially, contraception has done something similarly insane to the reproductive system. But we've become immune to the idea because we have grown up in this contracepting culture. We've taken organs and we've said, what they're for, we're not going to use them for that. And we forget how kind of ridiculous this idea is. Now, being open to life, which is what NFP involves. You're always open to life, even though you know certain acts will likely not result in children. So being open to life and understanding what sex is for does not mean you have to have 12 kids. It does not mean that at all. I myself have been married for going on 6 years, and I have 2 planned children, and they are 3 years apart. So many people who say they practice NFP actually do not, or they haven't been properly educated on it. And this is a big problem because you really need to be taught by an instructor how this method works. You need to be familiar with the troubleshooting. And most instructors sort of do it on an ongoing basis. So you don't just go to a class. You'll have an instructor that you can email charts to, ask questions. And when in doubt with NFP, always just abstain. And in the first couple months, there is quite a bit of abstaining. So it's sort of a bummer when you first switch over to it. So these methods, though, they're extremely reliable when executed properly. I recommend the Marquette method, which is devised by Marquette University. It's over 99% reliable, I believe, 98 or 99%, which it's just as reliable as birth control. And it uses hormone levels in your urine to determine fertile periods. So it's very objective. It's not like, what do I think is going on down there? No, you actually know with Marquette. And it's fantastic postpartum because a lot of women are not getting enough sleep to reliably temp, or in another popular method, the Creighton method, they use cervical mucus to determine what's going on. And a lot of times while breastfeeding or in the postpartum, those signs are not as reliable. So I always recommend Marquette. It uses a monitor, which is sort of pricey, but I highly recommend checking out eBay for them because the monitor that they recommend or that you have to use with it is actually used typically for conceiving. So a lot of people buy them and they use them for like 1 to 3 months or something, and then they're done. But because they're such a hefty investment, a lot of people are trying to flip them. So definitely try to get a used one if it sounds expensive. Getting back on track here, many women think using birth control is that it's just a matter of personal choice and not a moral decision where you consult the church. But this is a serious misunderstanding of the decision and birth control in general. In 1968, Pope Paul VI released a document called Humanae Vitae. Hopefully you know it. If you don't, get it, read it. It's translated in just about every language you could believe, with annotations and everything to cliff notes. You need to read it. Going on, this may be my favorite papal encyclical of all time. Importantly, it outlines why artificial contraceptives would not be moral for Catholics. Many people, when this came out, they didn't even read it because it coincided with the feminist revolution. And it was sort of decided that this was merely more female oppression. What many people missed in this document were 5 predictions that Pope Paul VI made about what would happen with widespread contraceptive use. Now, these predictions, I'll just spoiler alert for you, they all came true. So when I'm reading them, you're going to be like, well, that's just the way things are. But when he wrote this, this was not the way things were. And these 5 points are also based heavily on excerpts from the work of Dr. Janet E. Smith. If you're not familiar with her, she has several great books and an excellent talk that you should track down. You could probably find it on YouTube called Contraception, Why Not? She's brilliant. So going back to the 5 predictions of Pope Paul VI, the first one was that there would be infidelity and a moral decline. So the Pope first noted that the widespread use of contraception would lead to conjugal infidelity and a general lowering of morality. And there has indeed been a rapid decline in morality, and especially sexual morality, in the last 25 years. It's just, you cannot deny it. There have been skyrocketing numbers of divorce, abortion, out-of-wedlock pregnancies, and venereal diseases. These should convince just about anybody that sexual morality is not the strong suit of our age. I shouldn't say that, because some people think this is just great, so I don't know. But the second point is a loss of respect for women. Paul VI argued that the man will lose respect for the woman and no longer care for her physical and psychological equilibrium, and will come to a point of considering her a mere instrument of selfish enjoyment and no longer as his respected and beloved companion. So he realized, sort of prophetically, that the church's teaching on contraception is protecting the good of conjugal love. When men and women can have this consequence-free sex, they're not having sex with a person they're willing to spend the rest of their life with. They may not actually even love them, and they many times are not willing to have children with them. But the problem is, sex makes babies, and it creates a lot of problems. You don't need to look far to see where the misuse of sexuality has caused problems in people's lives, probably people in your life. The third point is the abuse of power. Paul VI observed the widespread acceptance of contraception and said that it would be a dangerous weapon, that in the hands of public authorities who don't care about morality, that it could become forced. And we actually saw this. There was forced sterilization of minorities in the United States, actually until the 1970s. And there's forced sterilization in China and a number of in places in Mexico it happens. And a lot of times these women don't even know what's happening to them. They're counseled that they're just having some sort of minor procedure and it's done and they never consented to it. We actually see this mentality seeping into our popular culture right now, where women are seen as irresponsible if they don't poison their bodies with oral contraceptives. I can't tell you how many people would see me with my 3-year-old and my baby and go, "Oh, are you on birth control?" And I'm just like, okay, that's not your business. And I guess I'm a little more outspoken. I'm not the kind of woman that you can just cow over and be like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm not on birth control. I have to listen to this church. I'm a poor little woman." That's not me. So please come ask me this question if you'd like to have some dialogue. Okay, back on track. Oral contraceptives are regarded by the World Health Organization as a class 1 carcinogen alongside arsenic and Agent Orange. So ask yourself, would you take arsenic if it would make it so that you were infertile? I know somebody's going to joke, I totally would, but you wouldn't. So the government has now made this free for everyone, and OB doctors, gynecologists, family practice doctors, they berate women postpartum to get on something. A lot of women will tell you that it's not enough to just say, "I use NFP." Doctors will really pressure them and coerce them to try to get them to take birth control, or else make them think that they're being negligent, that they're not caring for their existing children. So the question is, how long will it be before it's essentially mandated, before you have to opt out? Not unlike vaccines, which I actually support. That's a whole other can of worms. We're not going to go there. But right now, if you don't want to give them to your child, you need to fill out paperwork for schools. And I really think that you might see contraception go in that direction. You know, 25 years down the road, who knows? We did not think we would be where we are today with sexuality in 1968. So you just don't know. So the fourth point is the unlimited dominion. So Pope Paul warned that contraception would lead man to think that he had unlimited dominion over his body. He knew it would lead people to ignore biology, to ignore realities regarding their physical bodies. And as a result of this, divorcing the function and purpose of the sex act, children would become not a gift, but they would become a commodity to be obtained and owned, really, rather than a gift. And, you know, that child better be perfectly healthy or we're sending it back, because these are commodities and not people. And we really see that with 90% of babies diagnosed with Down syndrome in utero are aborted right now because they're imperfect. And we also see sex-selected abortion happening in the United States. So it seems children divorced from sex have become nothing more than these hairless designer dogs for some people. The thing that you acquire, like a bag or a tiny dog. Man has forgotten that babies come from sex. And the reason is so that they have two parents who made them, who would be like them, to care for them. And it's no wonder we have so much confusion going on. Self-discipline was the fifth and final point that Pope Paul VI made, and he explained that people would develop a lack of self-discipline that would affect their ability to practice chastity of any kind, and specifically NFP. And we see this as very true. I am in a community of people where I do know a large number of people who waited for marriage for sex and to practice NFP. But most people are going to say that they don't know anybody who does, and they don't know anybody who waited for marriage. And that's kind of the point. Pope Paul VI said that we would see that no one would have the self-control to do these things anymore. So on that lovely note, I would like to segue into two Catholic women discussing what it's really like to practice NFP, what we think it's like, what are the pros and cons, and to be honest about it, because NFP is hard. The contraceptive, you know, mentality to NFP, that's tough. You know, I won't lie. It was a foreign idea to me, and it took a lot of self-control to get it to work. I will go ahead and spoil the surprise and say that it's definitely 1,000% better and just a better plan in general. You can see this in the statistics for NFP couples. Rarely do these couples have sexless marriages, and there is an epidemic of sexless marriages in the United States. Sort of that oxymoron. We were supposed to be able to do it whenever, you know, with this sexual revolution, but we don't see that happening. NFP couples divorce at a rate of 2%, with the general population divorcing at around 50%, with subsequent marriages at even higher rates. So if you practice NFP, you know why this is already, why they're doing so much better. And there's two reasons that I really think, and that's that NFP is a periodic abstinence. So you avoid fertile periods, basically not having sex, when it could lead to pregnancy, while accepting that sex must always be open to life. These periods of abstinence actually add quite a bit of excitement into the mix, is what a lot of couples report. There's nothing that will make you want your spouse quite like not being able to be together. So in addition to this sort of tension building, NFP couples must monthly, daily even, talk to one another and assess their openness to life. The man and woman both have to become aware of when the woman is fertile, because men are always fertile. It's their fault. This is all their fault. No, I'm just kidding. Love you guys. Some couples actually have the man do the charting to share the burden. And this creates meaningful dialogue. It necessitates, you know, this talk, even if you're upset, and it's extremely good for your marriage. And you know that when you are together, both of you know that there could be a child, and that's sort of exciting. But even if it isn't likely, it's something you always know. And that actually says a lot about your partner's level of commitment to you without saying anything. It's very reassuring and even healing to know that this person loves you enough to, you know, potentially have a baby with you. And that's not what most people mean when they have sex anymore. And it's quite sad. All right, I've rambled long enough. Let us segue into the chit chat. It's quite informal, and I apologize. I just can't keep it together. I keep laughing, gabbing with my gal. All right, everybody, welcome to the Synod. I am your host, Rosalie Contrite of the Contrite Catholic Blog, and I am here with a perennial favorite, Martina of Little Southern Blog. Say hello, Martina.
Hey, y'all.
And we are talking about NFP today. And, oh, I just hit a high chair. That's very... This is real NFP. We're real bad at it. There's high chairs everywhere. No, I'm just kidding.
True life.
So what I wanted today was a very unscripted, real discussion about what it's like to practice NFP, because before this, I discussed the reasons why it's moral. And if you have questions, people, please write me at contrite.catholic@gmail.com. Or you can write Martina, because she loves emails.
Anytime.
We talked about the moral end of it. So now we're just talking about it from the point of view of, I accept this is what I should be doing, but what's it really like? So from that point of view, or whatever framework, what am I even saying?
Oh, I so get it. It's okay. I so understand what you're saying. It's hard at the end.
No, yes.
It's awesome. Like, NFP, I feel, is one of those things where it's a total love-hate relationship, which I feel like is a lot of things that are sometimes good for you, but you don't necessarily want to do, because you want to do things your own way all the time, but that's not always what's best. But what I have found is something I love about it is that you really can change your mind every single day. So if you're an indecisive person like me, you are awesome at NFP because you can change your mind from 1 minute to the next. You can say, well, no, we need to be TTA. And then something in your life could change for the better.
Why don't you tell the listeners what TTA means?
Okay. So let's break down some acronyms here. So TTA is trying to avoid. TTC is trying to conceive, and TTW is trying to whatever, basically do the funky chicken dance whenever you want.
Yeah, it doesn't really, I mean, it's basically what everybody who says they're practicing NFP is doing all, no, I'm just kidding. They're not really doing really. All the time. I really hate this about NFP. A lot of people who say they practice it are actually not, and it gives NFP a bad name, I think.
Correct.
Or they're practicing it part of the time. But the problem is then they have like 12 accidental children and everyone looks inward saying, well, look, that doesn't really actually work.
And I feel like it definitely gets that rap. At the same time, I don't think that people should look at those that choose to spend, you know, maybe... say, you know what, right now we're going to be TTW because we want to be together. So we're okay with bending the rules. And it's never a situation where it's not, where you're not cognizant of that. Like, you know, okay, if I have sex and I'm fertile, you could get pregnant. Like, you're aware because you're normally charting, especially if you're trying not to get pregnant at that moment. So I don't think, I mean, look, okay, I'm just going to use us as an example. We have two kids. I am so thankful that we were bad at following the rules. We were fully aware that it could happen, and it was the best blessing on the planet. But it wasn't the method that didn't work. It wasn't NFP that didn't work. It's like saying I'm on the pill, but then not taking it for a week. Well, duh, it might not work. At the same time, do you use those examples as its efficacy rate? Absolutely not.
Yeah, I think that's...
We're humans. We're not perfect.
I think that's key, is a lot of people that I know that use NFP when they have, not surprise babies, but babies that maybe they weren't like, hey, let's have a baby. They knew they were coming. They accept, part of NFP is taking advantage of infertile periods. That's the whole premise. With the understanding that a baby is always possible, because we cannot divorce the purpose of sex from the act. That would be... Right. Ridiculous. Although now I sound ridiculous because everybody really thinks, oh,
you know what? You want it real and honest. So we're getting it. So.
Yeah, I can't get it together. But what I really think is that people don't understand that these people who are like, oh yeah, we had kids closer together than we wanted. It's not because NFP failed. It's because they chose to be together and they were aware that it was a fertile period. It's not like, oh, we were trying really hard not to have a baby and it just came. That, like, is extremely rare in NFP.
Right. I mean, it's just as rare as someone who does take the pill and still gets pregnant. Honestly, yeah. If you genuinely follow your method, it's just as reliable as genuinely taking your pill. There's always that, like, what is it like? I know Creighton specifically, which is what method I used to practice, and now I practice Marquette, which if you want to talk about, we can talk about the different methods, but I want to say Creighton's like 98.2% effective, and don't quote me on that, but it's really close to that number, which is practically the same as the pill.
I think Marquette is like 99 something, and I also use Marquette right now, so...
Right.
Holla at Marquette University.
No Creighton person attacked me if that's totally wrong, but I'm trying to remember back. But it's crazy good. You just have to follow the rules. And most people choose not to when they want to be together.
Okay. And so what I'd like to segue into now that you say that is the church says use NFP. It's so good for your marriage and all that stuff. And I will say it is good for your marriage. There are a lot of good things about it. So first I want to start off with what you think are good things about NFP. I'll tell you what I think. I think that it encourages a constant conversation in your marriage. You're always reassessing whether or not you're willing to have kids. And you know, when you're together, that your spouse is open to potentially having a baby with you.
So they're not able to just use you for this self-gratification. It's really always this fully open marital act, which is really beautiful. And I don't think people realize what they're missing until they experience it. But also, having these periods of abstinence, you will never want to be with your spouse as much as you will when you can't. But those are the two
things. Baby, that's so true. Which is why we're so bad.
Right?
I mean, in all honesty, we've talked about how many kids we want. We have our number. So theoretically, if we were to get pregnant at one point, maybe sooner than we'd hope, it's still within that realm of what we're looking for as our current quote-unquote end goal. I mean, obviously, that could change tomorrow. Again, that's the beauty of NFP. You really get it and change depending on what life throws at you. But as you were saying, I think the beauty of it is that constant conversation, because we have that conversation all the time. It's never like me against you, and I'm not tricking my husband to get me pregnant and pretending to take my pill when I'm not, because we know that if we have sex, we could have a baby if it's during a fertile time. And being a wife of somebody who was raised atheist, who didn't really have necessarily a moral stance on sex, it was just that's what you do when you want to be with somebody or love someone.
Or you want to hook up for whatever
reason. Just hook up, right. You're drunk, hey. But what's so cool is seeing the mentality change. Because after our first, it was like, we cannot have another baby. And I was like, fine, then we're not having sex. Cool. And that didn't last very long. But I knew.
You jinxy minx.
Right. As awful as that sounds, I knew that if I was going to stand up for what I believed, I needed to live it. And I couldn't just cave for one thing. And it was hard, and we argued, and I cried a lot. But you know what? Now he's open to wanting more children than he'd ever thought he would have wanted in his entire life. I mean, even as of, like, a year ago, the number of kids he wants now is, like, double. So it's so awesome. And eventually we'll have to get this TTA thing down pat. Otherwise, we're going to, like, have so many children. We'll need, like, 10 minibuses. But
it's going to be the little southern clown car.
Exactly. What if some kids coming out left and right, like magic bags and all. But it just opens up this honest communication and mutual respect. And I think, I don't know, it's so cool.
It's so hard to describe to somebody, because in our culture today, a lot of times people only experience this really uncontracepted natural sex once or twice in their lives when they're trying to have kids, right? And I think that it's really led to people misunderstanding what children are. Instead of seeing them as a gift, which they are, we see them as a commodity that we should be able to get at the desired time in our life. And that commodity better be freaking perfect, or we're sending it back. And I think what you are describing in Ed Michael is this change. When you start to see that sex is tied to babies and that they're a gift, your whole mentality towards them, like, changes. Like, I don't see them as something I need to control and have specifically. I need a perfect girl and a perfect boy, and then I'm done, and I better be able to do whatever I want, whatever. And I think that leads to this, it's just in a natural amount of control. So it leads to dissatisfaction. I know a number of people in my lives who are just so depressed because they only have children of one gender, or because they got pregnant when they didn't want to. And I'm like, well, were you having sex? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like,
biology, baby.
What? Where? Like, she's like, but I was on contraception. And I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't change what sex does. When it works well, and to quote Jurassic Park, nature will find a way. When it's working well, babies happen. Like, that's the plan.
That's the point of sex. It's to procreate. You cannot get rid of it. Otherwise, our species would die out. Like, that's literally its purpose. It's cool that, like, it's fun and it's amazing bonding experience. But that it's tied in. Like, it's bonding because we want to have to do it so then we can further this species. Like, you cannot separate the two. It's literally impossible. And even when you try, you will fail. You'll fail.
You'll be like Martina when she's trying to avoid.
Exactly. My TTA chart's a little like TTC chart. So, but hey.
I just want to throw this out there for people who say that, you know, NFP is garbage. That I've been married for, I'm going to be going on 6 years. I have two children. They were both 100% planned, and they're 3 years apart, almost exactly. And if you know me, I'm very, like, particular about specific things in my life, and this is one of them. And if you really have a motivation for me, it was a health concern. It can be done. And I see a lot of people, they'll be like, well, I would be open to NFP, but I have this really good excuse. And to that I say, you know, Christ is pretty clear when he said, you can do no evil that good may come of it. So what does that mean? We can't do a bad thing for a good outcome. You know, like, we can't murder the bad guy so nobody gets hurt. Well, that's up for debate. No, I'm just kidding.
Let's not go down that road right now.
But what I'm saying is, I meet a lot of people who go, oh, that's really great. If I wanted a lot of kids, I would practice NFP. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works. Like,
you don't need to practice NFP. The church gave it to us.
Yeah.
It's not like we're forced, like, you will practice NFP.
No, well, it's a gentle suggestion. But she's our mother, the church. But I think that a lot of people believe that we get to be the moral ones because we want a lot of kids, and that's not true. Whether I wanted one or 12, I would practice NFP, and it could serve me. Because the bottom line is, if I don't want to get pregnant, it's very simple. I got a 100% effective solution. Don't have sex.
It's the most effective solution. It's just a matter of genuinely wanting it. And, like, people like me who, and there's a bunch of people like me who kind of joke around, like, well, we're really bad at, you know, TTA. It's like, but that's because we know that. It's not like we're being forced into it. We're not, like, conned. We're not just messing up, quote unquote. We are fully 100% aware. We know what our family goal is at the moment, and we know that it's okay. But like you said, if we had genuine, like, hardcore reasons, you just don't have sex. Novel idea on that one.
Yeah, and I'm going to say that isn't even what we did to put 3 years between our kids. We were just very regimented with the charting. And if we, you know, you'll have green and red days. So red's definitely no, green's a go. But you'll have a lot of yellow days. And if you're trying to avoid on those days, guess what? They're also red days. And right. You need to avoid on those days. You know, snuggle, go bowling. You'd be amazed what you discover in your spouse when you guys are trying to find something else to do. But what I also want to talk about and to make sure that we touch on is, what are the cons of NFP? And I don't mean this in a way of it's negative, it's bad, and we don't want to do it. I'm saying that these are very real pitfalls that you should be aware of. Other people are struggling them with you. And hey, write us. Tell us about your pitfalls. We'll probably tell you we have the same ones. So, Miss Martina, tell me about the pitfalls for you.
Oh, man. It's just hard sometimes. I mean, there are so many times, especially if you're TTA, and even if you're more laxed currently like I am, where you know you just shouldn't have sex because you have your valid reasons to wait. And it is hard, and it is so tempting, especially when you're postpartum, to be like, you know what, I'll take a little pill just to regulate my cycle so I can figure it out. But no, you tough it out and you figure it out. But that can be so confusing, and it's stressful, and it's so overwhelming. At the same time, it makes you rely on your spouse so much more. So it's like it really is love-hate. It's like you hate the fact that you're so overwhelmed and sometimes you have no idea what's going on, which, thank God, there are instructors that can teach you and look at your charts and know how to read them. It's like a doctor reading an EKG. I would be freaking lost and everyone would be having heart attacks if I was reading their charts. But at the same time, you can, like, rely on the other person. And it's okay to say, you know what, this freaking sucks. It sucks. And that's okay.
No, I really agree with that. I apologize if you can hear my cat. I'm not sure if that's what that is right now.
You heard a cat last time too.
Maybe no, my cat. Okay, I have a male cat, and he is neutered, and he meows like a girly cat in heat every day. Like people will come over who have never been here before, and they're like, "Oh, you need to get your cat fixed. She's looking for a boy cat," and I'm like, she is a boy cat, and she's fixed. Thank you.
She's fixed.
He's just real chatty. But what and I'll be real frank. If you know me personally, please stop listening because it's going to ruin our relationship forever. But if you don't know me, you can keep listening. Coming from, because I was an atheist, of course, you know, the contracepting culture, buying into that and being in a contracepting relationship, moving to NFP, it was very, very hard. I am not going to lie to you. It wasn't fun. It wasn't easy. It was very, very hard. And as I referenced earlier in the segment before this, where I kind of get into the nitty gritty and the papal encyclicals, I went to a priest friend of mine and I said, you know, this is really hard. And I don't think that you can appreciate it. And he looked at me and he said, no, you're right. I can't. But let me tell you something. It's like the choice between making that really involved healthy meal for your kids or giving them fast food or setting them in front of the TV or taking them to the park. One is very easy and one is the harder but better way. And oftentimes what's easy is not good. And I said, you're so right, because what's easy this way would be not good for us. And I go back to that in a lot of things. Like if I don't want to go to mass on Sunday or something, I'm like, this is the easy, but it's not right. And he was so right. And I realized in that moment that he didn't have this struggle, but he had struggles. And he was so right. The easy way is often not the best way. And so, you know, I really clung to that when we were trying to switch over. And I would say it took 3 to 4 years before the idea that contraception was the answer stopped climbing into my mind. Because it's very hard to develop self-discipline. Once we lose that self-discipline, you have to develop it. So anybody who's considering jumping to NFP, it's going to be hard. So have people in your life that you can talk to. You don't have anybody? Write me. No. It's worth it, but it is going to be hard. You'll really have to tell yourself what is easy is not always best. And there's a love-hate relationship with a lot of things that are good for us, like working out. A lot of people hate it, but they know that it's good for them and they do it. And I really think this is one of those things. So thank you for listening, and I hope to hear from you ladies at contrite.catholic@gmail.com. It's been real.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.